are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, one and all, to State of the Arts. I am without Mr. Sterling today because apparently Suave and Sophisticated Expo 2012 is in town, and Michael has been asked to present his motivational lecture, Cufflinks, What Happened? So we don't have Michael with us today, but we'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com. We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We are grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar. We have two gentlemen in studio today, two gentlemen I'm very anxious to speak to. We'll start with joining us in studio today, a true Renaissance man. Born on the south side of Chicago, his interests and expertise encompass all areas of the biz we call show. But today, being Musician Monday, we're focusing on the musical aspect of his many talents. Please welcome actor, writer, renowned musician, proud veteran, and overall badass, Oscar Jordan.
Wow. Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. And it's good. It's good to see you. You did. You're like the ghost of Charlton Heston.
My God.
Did you do that for me? Could you answer every question as Charlton Heston?
Get your monkey paws off me, you damn dirty ape.
Brilliant. I still want to have you call in as that. We'll do that. We'll do a ghost of Charlton Heston call in. What do you think?
Count me in.
All right.
Count me in. I'm there.
Also joining us in studio, simply the most effortlessly cool dude I've ever met. Oh. A man whose original catalyst to L.A. was writing fiction, but a stint working at the legendary Small's KO Bar in Hollywood would later evolve into one of the most unique groups in recent years. Here to represent his band Pilgrim, a band that, at least to me, epitomizes the great front porch jam, please welcome Jim Kalin.
Thank you.
How are you?
Yeah, good. That sounds like a dating game introduction.
It does. You know,
da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Is that a newlywed game?
So bachelor number one. Do you use coasters and like long walks on the beach?
I like pina coladas.
What about walks in the rain?
Oh yes.
Oh, there's just I wish I had music for this now. We could just do a little sort of funky 70s like. Can you hum something like that?
We could do that, Oscar.
Give a little background.
She's a prick. House. Oh, girl.
I don't really have a... Oh, look at this. My system just locked up. My cursor's not moving. I was going to give you a yee-haw on that, and I glitched on it.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, but sorry. See, it doesn't nearly have the weight when I have to announce it and then actually play it.
Better late than never.
Delighted to have you both here. It's really sort of fortuitous that both of you would be on the same show because you both have the commonality is that you have a very mixed influence in your music. We'll talk about both of your musical styles, starting with you a little later, Oscar. But it's very much a gumbo. Both of you have sort of a gumbo type of, throw it into the pot and bring it all up together. You couldn't say, oh, this is the type of music they do because it's a single category. So I'm very interested in talking to you both about that when we get to that. Matter of fact, why don't we just leap right into it? We'll start with Oscar, and I'll give him the intro he is due. Our first guest debut album, Mr. Bad Luck, was called the finest debut in years and a blues classic by Real Blues Magazine. The follow-up album, Eclectic Soul, was met with even more acclaim. It was, according to Living Blues Magazine, a heartfelt ode to the redemptive power of music, a 70s-style meld of rock-tinged funk and neo-psychedelic organ fretboard interplay.
Whoa.
Tough enough for... I got that out pretty good. Tough enough for street cred and sufficiently boho literate to please the hipsters. Once again, give it up for Oscar Jordan.
Thank you.
Wow.
Glad to have you, man.
That is just the almost overblown...
What?
Stuff.
What? Wow. Hey, man, I just took it off your website, man. Don't kill the messenger.
Saying, man. It's like, oh.
did you write that, Oscar?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
Did.
Just read the cards, Jim. Just read the cards. He'll hold them up.
I am.
He'll hold them up, and he'll tell you exactly what to do. So, you know what? Let's do this. Before we start talking with you, let's play a little music to give our listeners a little taste of what it is you do, if that's cool. And then we'll come back and we'll talk about it. This is a track, Never Been Hurt. What's it off, Oscar? The first one or the second one?
This is off of Eclectic Soul.
Okay, so this is Never Been Hurt, and it's off Oscar's second album, Eclectic Soul. Let's give it a listen.
You got to love like you've never been hurt. On your way, make a funny face, burn your tracks. I work on and I beg on just to fly off to the moon. You got to love like you've never been hurt. You got to I work on and I beg on just to fly off to the moon. You got to love like you've never been hurt.
That's so awesome.
Oh, awesome guitar playing,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah?
And the wah, the wackity, wackity, wackity.
Wackity.
Wackity, wackity.
Okay, so I heard this quote the other day, which I thought was very interesting. It was a Tom Waits quote. I'm a huge Tom Waits fan. And Tom Waits said that we always start like replicating our heroes before we find our voice. And I know you have a lot of musical influences. Where do you think that point was for you? I mean, how much... list your influences and when you really felt like you sort of had a grasp on your own sound versus sort of maybe blindly parroting them.
I got to be honest with you. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I just, I've always, I think what it was my parents were into like way too much stuff. Like my grandmother was into like Harry Belafonte, you know, and and then like opera, and then, you know, then, oh, what? My mom's putting on like Charlie Pride records and then, you know, that kind of thing. And then my dad was more into like big band and like 40s and, you know, then I got into like the 70s music and everything, and then became a Beatle freak. So all that stuff gets all rolled around. And of course, when you're, as you know, this is when you're a musician, you have to copy people.
Oh, yeah.
So that, you can kind of find yourself, and you know, there's this whole area before you get good where you're just copying and you're just trying to figure out how to take your brain and make your fingers do what you want to do, and that's the copying phase, and then hopefully you will move on from that and just to start making things up that come out of your own head as opposed to trying to sound like Deep Purple or Jimi Hendrix. You try to do your own thing, and this is the quote that I'm gonna ruin, but basically the quote is that, you know, I'm as good as I am because of my failure to be Jimi Hendrix. Basically. You know what I mean? I'm falling short, but when I fall short, I got this other thing. Oh, well, I got this, and this is kind of interesting, and you kind of run with that. And that's kind of how it works.
When did you first start studying guitar? Because interesting, I was reading Jim's bio, your promotional material, Jim, and you started playing way late. I mean, you learned music not way late, but later than most people who are as proficient as you are would learn. When did you begin? Was it the teenager you picked up a guitar?
It was when my uncle came home from college in the 60s with his acoustic guitar and started playing Puff the Magic Dragon. I swear to God, he sat me on his lap and I was a little kid and he had me strum and he played the chords and I was like, oh, this is it.
Oh, man.
I was going to guess Peter, Paul, and Mary. I was.
That's it. But that the whole, I was a folkie when I first started. I was a folk guitar player. I played all the, you know, I was into Dylan and like Paul Simon and, you know.
There's so many of us of that
age. Acoustic styling, you know.
So many of us of that age group have so many, it was so prominent in the 70s. Jim, I don't know how old you are, but I'm 47. Oscar, I think you're a couple of years older than me. Mm-hmm. The folk music of the 70s was so prevalent that it flavored a lot of things. Even if it didn't stick with you, it flavored it. Like we used to work together and we used to talk about, you know, all the Jim Croce stuff. And I was a huge Loudon Wainwright fan. And of course, Dylan, you know, Dylan permeated everything. But it really is
I still listen to the Simon and Garfunkel Bookends album.
Oh, yeah.
I love that stuff.
That'll
always be with me for life. James Taylor, that'll never leave my body.
Did you see that clip that was on YouTube? It was really prominent maybe about 2 or 3 months ago of Duncan, the girl in concert. Did you see this thing?
Mm-mm.
There was a Paul Simon concert recently, and a woman in the audience shouted something like, they said they was going to play Duncan, you know, and a girl in the audience said, that's what I learned to play guitar on.
Wow.
And he said, okay. And he brings her up on stage. And he brings her up, hands her the guitar. If you watch it online, I guarantee you will have a tear in your eye by the end of it. Because she can't believe it's happening. All during it, she plays it. He's backing her up. He's leaning over her shoulder. He's telling her, you know, wait, they're going to come in with this. They're going to come with this. And she does this primal scream of joy, like halfway through it. Look it up on YouTube. Look for it's a Paul Simon, Duncan, you know, girl from audience or whatever. But it's a beautiful piece.
That song is one of the first songs I could play completely.
Really?
That's off his first solo album. I think it's called There Goes Rhymin' Simon.
Oh, okay.
And that's the first I think it's on his first album, and I remember that. That's a great song.
For a Paul Simon song, it is actually a lesser known song.
Yes.
I mean,
yes,
but it's a great one.
Yeah, I'm not that familiar with it. I don't know how I'd play it. How many? What is?
It's very much like The Boxer in that style.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
You know, it's a story song. And
right.
It's about alienation, and you know, like Paul Simon does really well.
Yeah.
And then there's a flute solo in it.
Yeah.
That's really
what
cool.
he has her pause for that, and she just like it's so beautiful. As a matter of fact, I have both of your email addresses. I'll send you the link so you won't even have to look for it. But you just made me think of that when you were talking about the when you learned and Puff the Magic Dragon. And oddly enough, Mary Travers lived in my hometown, Ridgefield, Connecticut.
Wow.
Did you know her?
I didn't know her. No.
Wow.
No. My mom
wanted to know her.
Yeah. Oh, everyone wanted to know her.
Sure.
Except I think she should have given up the bangs after a while. The bangs did after 60, the bangs started to look a little odd. Love her dearly, but you know, lose the bangs.
That's before Botox.
Wow, hair police here. Wow.
What?
Hair police, huh?
Hey, you know how I am. You know, Captain Snippy. So, first album, Mr. Bad Luck, probably more traditional blues than the second one. More, would you say that? Am I describing it accurately?
At the time, I had this wacky vision, and as you well know, it's good to start with a vision. You know, just to have some kind of plan. I want some grand vision, some plan. And my plan is that I had been playing a lot of blues, and I would listen to blues albums. And I was listening to blues albums for my friends, and they bored me to pieces. I was like, God, they're playing all these shuffles, and oh, here's another slow shuffle, and oh, here's a slow blues, oh, here's a shuffle, oh, a minor blues, oh, wow, we're really mixing it up now. So I thought, I have to make an album where every song is blues, but it's completely different from the last one.
Okay.
So one track sounds like it could have been done in the big band era. Three chords, keeping it blues, but it's a jump blues. It's a really,
right.
Hey now, baby, you know, call and response. Have another song where it's like this dark or minor West Side sounding blues. Another song where it's funk blues. So basically every single track is a completely different type of blues. It's fun for the entire family.
You know, but it is interesting because you listen to the album and you listen to the tracks side by side, and it's not only that, but also I think that because you're an actor as well, and I really think, much like the early Billy Joel stuff,
mm-hmm.
there's such a level of performance within the song delivery. It's like in you're playing characters. One of the things I love about Randy Newman is that Randy Newman creates these really disagreeable characters as the stars of his songs, and then sings from the point of view of that screwed up person, which is why I just love that risk that he takes, trusting his audience enough to get that. And do you think that, how much do you think you're being a performer, being a trained actor, affects your delivery of a song?
The producers, the two producers who co-produced that record with me, were so abusive. So abusive.
Really?
The yelling and the hitting.
They're supposed to do that. That's their job.
And the smacking and hey, come on. Snap out of it. You got this is your big break, see? You gotta sing it. Give it all you got, see?
Wait a minute. Edward G. Robinson produced your album.
Yeah, you know, kinda like that.
There's your Messiah for you.
Exactly. Where's your Messiah now? Where's your Messiah? Sorry.
But
so they beat you mercilessly about the face and neck.
Well, it was the whole situation was they were young producers. They had just opened up their first studio. I was their first client in their brand new studio in Hollywood, and this was going to be the flagship song and the album and all that. And they gave me a deal on, you know, how to put it out and everything. And they were just jerks. They were just complete jerks. And they just, and I was like, I gotta finish this record. I'm going to tolerate them because I need to get this done. And after it's done, I'm going to murder them in their sleep. But I got it done, and I just bit my tongue. But they really kind of pushed me to, they made me raise the bar for myself. And I had to just really bring it out. And at the time, I hadn't had as much performing as I have now. So I needed that push, and it really helped with the performances and the songwriting and the arranging. And so it all worked out.
Did you find that being in a brand new studio hampered you in any way? I mean, aside from them, just in the fact that the room hadn't really been seasoned with music yet. I heard a musician say once that certain studios get very bitchy about what they'll allow to take place in them. You know, the room gets bitchy about what it will tolerate.
Like a ghost.
Like a ghost, or just a flavor of... Yeah, like a ghost.
Like a music ghost.
A bitchy ghost.
A bitchy...
A bitchy...
You're not playing in here. No way. You, out.
No, I didn't say a heroically gay ghost.
Oh, okay, sorry.
I just said bitchy ghost, but that's...
Well, I tell you, at the time, I was putting up all this money, and I'm like, let me just get this damn thing done, and let me do it right. And you know, I was taking abuse, but I was focused, and I was going to get it done,
and I was going to
play my butt off. And I hired some cool session cats on the side, you know, some great piano players and a couple of great drummers.
The glorious Paul Kennedy.
The glorious Paul Kennedy on stand up bass.
Yeah,
he was great. So we had different people. I just thought of this, I rarely have great ideas, but this one was one of my greatest ideas. I said, gosh, if I could just write a Christmas song.
Oh yeah.
If they're going to play it 9,000 years from now.
And you're going to get rich.
When we're all replicants and people don't exist anymore and animals rule the earth.
Soylent Green.
Exactly. They'll be playing, you know, my song called Christmas Day, which I wrote it from the perspective of this little kid living on the south side of Chicago eating paint chips.
And I can honestly say without reservation, it is the single most depressing Christmas song you've ever heard. It's a great groove and it's a great song, but... you know, what was it? What is it? Santa Claus got drunk and felt up my little brother.
Exactly. And it's the most horrible Christmas song. And they play it everywhere, every year.
Yeah.
And I always get these emails every single year. People love it.
You got to get it on that alligator Christmas thing. You know, because that's just FU money, as they say. Let's listen to one more track of Oscar's. This is, which album is this off of? You and I is the name of it.
That is off Eclectic Soul as well.
That is. Okay. So let's give this a listen. Oscar Jordan off Eclectic Soul. The track is You and I.
Matter.
homage there. homage. It was
that was
great.
Nice.
That's really nice, Oscar.
Thank you very much.
Do you, is it possible, because, you know, I remember reading the liner notes to your first album, and you just said, I believe it was, you know, just, I love these damn songs.
Yeah.
And when you're, do you like one album over another? Are you happier with one just because you were more experienced when you, in the art of album making by the time you made it, or is your affection for the two albums the same?
Well, they're slightly different because one is, well, they were both very successful. But when the second one came out, the hardcore blues fans loved the first one better because it was more blues based.
Right.
And the second one, I felt like, hey, this is my Sgt. Pepper. Don't you get it? You know, this is, I'm doing all this stuff. I got all these sounds and I'm, you know, I'm getting all this psychedelic and, you know, all this cool stuff in there. And they're like, yeah, but we just like blues, you know? So they just wanted, you know, they wanted to hear the down home stuff that hits you in the soul. And that's fine.
Right.
So one was, they were both critically successful, but people who listen to my music and come to my shows, they like the first one better because it's just blues, straight ahead blues. And the second one is a little bit more more rock, funk, and, you know, so other people like that. They just like it differently. And I personally love both of them.
Yeah. But, and a shout out to your, Karen, what's her name?
Karen Dilworth.
Dilworth,
my cousin.
Yes, who sings the lead on I Liked You Better When You Were Drinking.
Yes.
Which is a very, very, it's just a great song.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
off the second one, right?
Right,
yeah.
Right. Okay. She really sang that one.
Before I forget, the place to learn of all things Oscar Jordan, oddly enough, OscarJordan.com. So Oscar and last name JORDAN.com. You can learn about both albums. Those albums are Mr. Bad Luck and Eclectic Soul, and they're well worth the purchase price. Well worth the price of admission. Great albums.
And I'm going to be at Silly's in Winnetka, California.
Oh, really?
June 22nd.
June 22nd?
June 22nd.
Silly's?
Silly's.
I'm
Silly's.
Going. Where's
Silly's
that?
Silly's Nightclub in Winnetka, California.
In Winnetka, California.
That's right.
And can I invite the ghost of Charlton Heston to join us there?
My God.
Silly's, you haven't, is that a new place?
Yes. We played there once before.
You just played Corky's, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Is it a Corky's, a Silly's? Does everything end in a Y where you play?
Yes, yes.
Really?
That's kind of the theme that we're trying to run here, you know, playing in Goofies after that. So.
Goofies.
Yeah.
All right. Silly's in Winnetka. That information will be on your website,
yes,
right?
Yes, it will.
And that's OscarJordan.com. Okay, Oscar, stick around if you would. We're not going to let you go just yet, but we do have to pay the bills here, so let me do my little arts calendar here, and then we will talk to the lovely and talented Jim Kalin of Pilgrim.
Hi,
post
girls.
That. Country music legend Sonny Burrell walks into just another truck stop in the middle of nowhere, USA. He's returning to his hometown to perform a concert at the Indiana County Fair and to try to connect with the wife he never divorced, the brother he abandoned, and the grown daughter he never got to know. His bittersweet homecoming fuels an unforgettable collision of the strong and the wise, and is a reminder of how fame gets in the way of life, love, and ultimately death. Where the Great Ones Run is presented by Rogue Machine and will open on May 26th at their home at Theater on Pico in Los Angeles. For further information about any productions and or events mentioned in today's State of the Arts live calendar, visit us at stateoftheartsla.com. That's stateoftheartsla.com. We also suggest you drop in at performingartslive.com, where you can search for Southern California events in several different categories happening every day of the week. So that's our arts calendar. And also, remember, we're on Facebook.com, State of the Arts LA. And now, our next guest, those of us lucky enough to have been in LA in the mid-90s, will remember a cinder block grotto of bar called Small's KO. During the hours of operation, it was a favorite of the Gen X crowd, but it was the after-hours sessions that made it legendary. Secret late-night jams requiring a special knock at the back door soon included celebrity guests including Harry Dean Stanton, Ryan Adams, Flea, and the late great Jeffrey Lee Pierce. There was just one rule on these nights: acoustic instruments only. Out of that glorious gumbo evolved Pilgrim, a living link to the rollicking, huffing, jalopy sound of country and blues that today's Americana movement was founded upon. Here to talk about Pilgrim and their critically acclaimed album Late, please welcome Jim Kalin. How's it going, man?
pretty good. That's a nice welcome, I'll tell you.
Jim, you shaved. You threw me, man.
Yeah, I know.
I was digging the beard. Yeah. I dug it so much. I always had this. I have a man crush on you. I got to tell you,
okay,
I got a man crush on you. And you lost the beard. I grew the beard. You know, wanted to be more Kalen-esque.
Yeah,
you know.
You know, we had a New Year's Eve party where we went as the my wife, my 3.5-year-old, and myself, and my slide guitar player. We went as the cast of True Grit.
Oh.
So I went as the Texas Ranger, and of course he doesn't have a beard, so I had to shave it off. My son was Rooster.
Oh, was it?
He had a flask full of Gatorade, and he's, you know, he was great. So,
oh, that's
so
that's
it's hilarious. Yeah, it's gone. He wants it back, but I don't know. I'll see.
Yeah, yeah. How you doing?
Pretty good.
Yeah. The album's great.
Thanks.
Really is. I'm going to play a couple of tracks for it. We got a couple here. We got Common Man and Mr. Brown.
Love that.
But historically, tell me about this. Reading the bio information about the origins of the Smalls KO, I lived walking distance from Smalls KO when it was. It was operational.
Were you a patron?
I would go there
on
occasion. Yeah.
Okay.
So you were probably there, and we never met one another.
It's crazy because I was there when it opened, and I was there when it closed, and in between all, you know. So I'm sure I served you a drink or two.
I'm sure you did.
Sorry about that.
I'm sure you did. No, I was at right behind Rally Studios. My wife and I lived on Norton.
Right.
And we used to go to Lucy's El Adobe Cafe, which was right there, and just go a little farther, Smalls KO.
Yeah.
What I find most interesting about it is that it was not only the birth of Pilgrim there, but it was sort of the birth of your musical education as a musician, really astounds me that it was that late that you learned, because I've heard you play banjo, and you're very, very accomplished.
Oh, thanks.
And how did you take to it so quickly? Is it just having great, great teachers, or what?
No, I was going through a breakup when I got my banjo, and so I had I just had a ton of time, and I just would sit for 3-4 hours and just run through the roll patterns, and it came to me pretty quick, I think. But when you see someone like Earl Scruggs, though, you shake your head and think, God, I'm, you know, like Jimi Hendrix, you're talking, mm-hmm. It's just you've got a long way to go.
Right.
So. But Smalls was my father played piano, so you know I was exposed to that when I was a kid. But unlike you, your albums are about they're you, but we're a band. So Smalls was where I started, and I would I'd at the end of the night we'd close down, and I'd be doing my restocking the beer coolers and everything, and the slide guitar player Jean Pellerin from Canada, and the guitar player Tom Stampalia from Australia. Tom was a doorman there. They would be off in the corner with a few other guys playing, and I just wanted to do. I wanted to be there with them and do that. And I'd listen to them, and this went on for about a year. And finally, one of the guys said, "Why don't you just get a guitar, learn some chords, and just sit with us?" His big thing was, "It's campfire. You can do it. It's just campfire." So I did. I sat at home for about a month and, got Let It Bleed by the Rolling Stones and just learned to play to that. And, just started playing with these guys. And it was great. It was, the best thing I've ever done.
That's really inspiring to me, because I have this whole thing about music that I love it, but I don't want to know the magic trick. It's like I don't want to see the man behind the curtain. I want to be a little removed from it, because I don't want to.
Paul has the longest fingers.
I know,
in
I know.
The human
and
race.
That's the
and
thing.
He would
it's
be
just,
the most amazing guitar player in the world if only we could train him to use his powers for good.
For good, yes. I do. I have hands like a tree frog, and I just don't. I mean, and I, you know what? On a piano, octave and a fifth, 13 keys.
Oh yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But I just can't. It's almost like you don't want to own a movie you love, because you don't want to.
Right.
And but your story is very. It's very inspiring, because I've always wanted to.
Yeah, I had to do it, and it was really the slide guitar player. It was really Jean.
Yeah.
I mean, he is just a chugging, roaring engine. He's played with so many people, and. It's just you listen to him when he starts up, and it's just, we played the Hard Rock about a week ago, and when we were doing sound check, the place was full, and he hit just two chords, and you could hear the girls swooning, they're just screaming, and it just
it's incredible.
Oh man.
Yeah, it's great.
Let's give a little listen, actually, while we got it here. This is off of Late. This is a track called Common Man by Pilgrim. Here's another element that combines you two. I was thinking about the two types of music and how why they appeal to me so much is because I like my music with the stems and seeds still in it.
Oh yeah.
I don't like filtered stuff out. It's like every singer I like is not a conventional singer. I like Joe Cocker. I like Tom Waits. I like Randy Newman. I like
Leonard Cohen.
Leonard Cohen. I had to tell you a very funny Leonard Cohen story because I love Leonard Cohen. And I'm doing this play in Santa Monica with this lovely young lady named Lucy Honigman from Australia. She's 22 years old. She's a phenomenal young actress. And she's a Leonard Cohen fanatic, and my wife is not. My wife's, the actual quote is, well, I went to see him at Nokia, and I asked my wife if she would come, and she said, it's not that I don't like his voice. It's that it fills my heart with the blackest abject despair. So it's like, so there was no way I was getting her to go to, and this is how much she hates Leonard Cohen's voice. Because I said to her, you know, Monica, if you won't come with me, I'll have to take the hot 22-year-old from my show. And she's like, you kids have fun. It's like, okay, I guess the point is made. But yeah, no, so I don't like that. I like the song, not the singer, although so much of the song is how it's delivered. I mean, we talked about your performance aspect in your stuff. If you ever see Waits perform, he's like a sideshow barker. He's like a carnival guy. He's just created this whole mystique about it. But or do you sing primarily on the Pilgrim tracks, or is it shared?
It's all four of us do, which is great, yeah.
And your wife is just a great barn burner of a voice.
Man. She, you know, my wife came out here to act. And, you know, she did. And then when we met, I was doing things, you know, with this band. And we thought, I'd seen her in a play, Kill Your Darlings, and she sang. And so I thought, let's get her up and, you know, she can sing backup, do a song. So she did. Well, then the next show she did too. Then she got her own song. So now it's... she's kind, you know, we all have our own songs and we all sing, but it's kind of nice having her as a frontman because she doesn't play anything and she's really big and she's just kind of a reverse black hole. I mean, you know, everybody, you know, just, you know, their focus is on her. Yeah. So, yeah, she's really great.
No, she is. She is. And this is Heidi Huber-Kalin that we're talking about, and she's wonderful. And it doesn't hurt having a great-looking redhead there.
It doesn't.
As your your front man, as it were.
Yeah. She distracts me.
Well, as well she should. Yeah, she should.
Because you actually want people to come to your shows, right?
You know. And that's a thing you should consider, Oscar. A red wig, maybe? You think you could pull it off?
And pumps?
Pumps.
Hey, if the people will show up, I'll be there. I'll dress up any way they want.
I'm coming to Sillies if you do that.
Yeah, that's why it's called Sillies.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It's very silly. Now, at my last show Friday, I was trying to get the people in, and I couldn't get enough. I was trying to, like, being a barker. So I started to do the robot outside of the club to bring people in the club, and it worked. I swear it worked. I was... I did the robot. I was dancing the robot, and people started coming in.
Did you paint yourself silver?
No.
A whole bunch of singles.
I will do anything, but it worked. So you got to do stuff, you know? It's not all just about the music.
No, it's about marketing.
Not. Exactly.
It's about marketing.
Exactly.
It is. Speaking of recent performances, how was your Planet Hollywood gig?
We did Hard Rock. Which,
Hard Rock, I'm sorry.
Yeah, the sound was kind of tough. You know how that goes sometimes. Yeah, no. And we did the Viper Room about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
That was a little bit better. But we're best after 2 a.m. sitting, you know. I'm part owners in a place called Powerhouse. So actually, we play at Powerhouse generally every Tuesday from 5 to 7.
Okay.
So it's like a happy hour. So
what's the address of Powerhouse for the listeners?
It's 1714 North Highland, right at Hollywood Boulevard.
Oh, okay. So Hollywood and Highland.
Yeah, but yeah. You know, we're going to actually play on a porch at the Topanga Banjo Fiddle Contest in 2 weeks, and that's how I like us. You know, just roaring and chugging along, and you know, we'll have friends come up. At the bar after hours, who knows who's going to be there, people, celebs, non-celebs, it's just whoever shows up can come and grab one of our guitars, or people bring things,
There's just such a glorious, unrefined quality to what it is. It's just got such great bones to it, and it's just such a wonderful sound. It really is.
Thanks.
You should be very, very proud of it. And I say gloriously unrefined in only a positive way.
Who wants refined? It is us.
Who wants refined?
This is us.
The thing that Jim just mentioned, that's Sunday, May 20th from noon to 6. That's the Topanga Banjo Fiddle Contest at Paramount Ranch. The website for that is topangabanjofiddle.org. That's topangabanjofiddle.org. And while we're giving out websites for Pilgrim, it's pilgrimtunes.com. That's www.pilgrimtunes.com. They have a Facebook page, facebook.com/pilgrimLA. That's facebook.com/pilgrimLA. And if you're on iTunes, search Pilgrim, Late. Late, L-A-T-E. That is the name of the most recent CD, and much like Oscars, well worth the price of admission. Evolving into the sound that Pilgrim became, was that, obviously it was by committee, but you already had a big appreciation for bluegrass and country music. Was that just shared, or was that sort of your strongly worded suggestion that you guys sort of follow that?
You know,
or?
Tom and John really liked rock and blues, and I think I brought bluegrass, more of that kind of Appalachian thing to it. And when I started, nobody was really writing songs, so I thought, you know, I was nervous to even sing with these guys, you know. So I finally started bringing songs, and they'd be like, what's that? Who did that? And I kind of meekly say, I wrote that. And so, you know, it kind of became that, and then we're influenced by a lot of different people that would come around. You know,
right.
Yeah. So,
you just absorb that stuff.
Yeah,
we're spending time with them.
We were all sponges, and you know,
wow.
Fighting for, you know, our sound, and you know, we're.
Did you, Oscar? Let me throw that to you. Did you write before, like Mr. Bad Luck, your first album? Had you written songs before that, or did you just sit down as like, you know, I'm gonna do an original album, and I gotta have songs for it? Or did you have sort of, you know, songs in your back pocket before that you had written?
I had no songs in my back pocket. I had bad songs that I was abandoning, and I still had them on a piece of paper somewhere. What happened was I decided I'm writing this kind of concept blues record, and I just started making stuff up. It was just simple as that. I know it sounds weird, but I just said, let's make a song about Christmas Day. let's make a song about, and it's all about these conceptual visions of like the title Mr. Bad Luck was, that's like a cool, like a kind of name for some kind of blues guy or something. So I kind of created this character, and it just ran with it. I was on a roll.
Yeah. And did you find that are all the tracks on Late original?
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
Okay. Everybody who sings is the person who wrote it. So my wife wrote a song. She's never written a song before. It's wonderful. It's about the passing of her father. And a lot of people, that's kind of their favorite song.
Oh, really?
It's called Circle the Wagons. Yeah, it's great. But
because she's a country girl, right?
Yeah.
She grew up on a farm.
Grew up on a farm. Yeah, horses and corn. And they would go to horse shows and listen to Waylon Jennings and Dolly Parton. And it's great stuff.
Tom T. Hall.
Old dogs and watermelon.
I worked on a farm growing up. Even though I lived in Connecticut, we had one farm, and I worked on it.
Baling hay?
I did everything. I baled hay, milked cows, mucked out stalls, and there is no harder work on the planet. It's hard work.
There's no Sunday, no day off.
No.
You like milking cows?
Yeah, I do.
Really?
Why? How could you possibly make such Americana sound dirty?
I'm just saying. Yeah, you know, right. You probably enjoyed it the most of all the things you could do on a farm. You probably.
Well, I would have to say that if you held milking cows up with shoveling shit, I would have to say that milking cows would win.
Sure, you're sitting. I'm just saying. You're sitting, right?
You're sitting.
Yeah.
And you're gripping. And you're tugging.
Yes, yes. Well, I was 14. There was a lot of that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Jesus. What kind of show is this?
I know. Why did you have to go there? Let's play something to clean up the collective thing. This is called, also from the Pilgrim album, Late. This track is called Mr. Brown. Let's give this one.
This rocks.
I know it does. That's a great song. Whose is that?
That's Tom Stampalia, our Aussie guitar player. That's his song.
Tom Stampalia.
It's an awesome song. And Tom is not a big writer. And when he came up with that thing, we were all just like, wow, that's great.
You know,
and it's a story, you know?
It sounds like it's so infectious. The hook is so infectious on that it actually, and I say this not because I think it sounds derivative, but it sounds like this historical bluegrass song.
It does.
Don't you think?
You know what? We play that every year at Topanga, and you know we play it everywhere, but at Topanga especially, at the banjo fiddle contest, people come up and they go, everyone's certain they've heard it.
Yeah.
And people, you know, after you hear the first, you know, hear a minute of it, people are singing along. And they're like, we've heard that. Who did that song? And tell them, it's Tom's song, he wrote it, and they can't believe it.
That's great.
It's ours.
Paul was talking about he doesn't like the seeds and the stems and his music, and I was listening to the production, and it just sounds like you guys are just sitting on chairs in a room with the mics and let's play.
The three of us sat. That's kind of how we did most of this album. We'd sit and play the song through, no drums, you know, that wasn't what we started with, and we'd play that through. And so you had to get it pretty close, but, you know, liking seeds and stems, it didn't have to be, you know, there's little things in there. But then we'd go on top of that, then we'd add vocals and all that, then we'd do overdubs and cheat and do all that
kind of
stuff.
So there was no click track or anything like that?
No, total feel thing,
right?
Click track kills us.
What is a click track?
Well, when you're recording and you're anal retentive about the time and you want it to be perfect, so it helps you to overdub things and do parts so that you know click, click, click.
Like a metronome?
Like a metronome.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And but you don't hear it, but when you're recording, you hear it, so you can be in good time. They didn't need that because they're going for the vibe, and the time might drift. But it's
right.
okay.
Right.
That's
right.
how that's what humans do.
Because that's yeah. the bend that you want.
Right.
You
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
We're jalopy. So you know, yeah. you kinda have your tires aren't all even and you're gonna, you know.
Yeah.
But you know what, the click track also, a lot of engineers want that for themselves.
It's for editing mostly.
Yeah. But you know, a lot of the we had so many different people, engineers, you know, work on this. A guy Mike Stromso was real good. Mike Masters, you know, laid a lot of it down. And then we had a guy, Pat McCarthy, who produced and engineered all REM stuff. Mm-hmm. So we are lucky to get him.
I'm sorry, I'm going to interrupt you. We have a call in, and I'm just curious to see, so we'll answer it, and we'll see who we're talking to here. This is State of the Arts. Who are we talking to?
Well, hello. This is Roger from Thousand Oaks.
Roger from Thousand Oaks. Good to hear from you, Roger. Haven't talked to you in a while. What's going on?
Well, the azaleas are in bloom, so I've been busy on the yard.
That's great.
And
you know, it's music.
Rubbish.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
No, please. Go right ahead.
I was just saying it's Music Monday. Thank you for calling in. Are you a big music fan?
You know, I love music. And I understand you have some musicians on your show today.
Yes, we do. We have Oscar Jordan and Jim Kalin from Pilgrim have joined us.
Fantastic. Now, I know a lot of these musicians get ready for these shows and roll up and smoke some of these marijuana cigarettes. I don't know if you're involved in any of that.
Seeds and stems.
Not currently, but I've been known to partake in my younger days, yes.
Well, we all have the folly of youth. Paul, you know that.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do, Roger.
I'm down with the chronic.
Roger, I mentioned...
Yes. Whatever that means, Paul, I'm not hip to what you kids talk about these days.
Either of us.
You know, I've been watching a lot of Bond TV lately. It's on demand, of course.
I'm saying, did you say you're watching Bondage TV?
Yes, it's on demand.
Okay. and that relates to our music show in that are there musical themes to these bondage shows, or am I missing the point entirely?
No. Well, you know, let me just tell you, recently, I've been a little upset. I met a woman who turned out to be an arsonist, and I had met her on Match.com, but there's other red flags as well.
Thank you. Match.com, that's very strong.
Boy.
That's very strong.
Hey, you got to be very careful these days.
I wanted to ask you, Roger from Thousand Oaks, did you ever get that issue resolved with that urologist who wouldn't cut his nails?
Well, yes. I've gone to see another woman.
Okay.
But every once in a while, when I want to just really feel alive, I'll book an appointment with her.
I'm happy for you. I have to say goodbye to you, Roger. I want to sign off with these two gentlemen. We only have 2 minutes left. But thank you for being a longtime listener and first-time caller.
I'll send a check.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Roger from Thousand Oaks. He's a big fan.
Wow.
He's a big fan. And Roger doesn't get out much, as you could probably tell. He sent me an email today saying he was going to call. He said, Roger from 0999 Oaks. They just cut one down and it hit my Prius.
Oh,
yes,
man.
So that's his life on the edge with Roger. Anyway, before we go, I wanted to ask you, Oscar, we always like to end the show. We have like 2 minutes left. We always like to end the show with unusual performance aspects, things that have happened. But actually, no, I'm reminded now that Jim said something when we were off the air about the secret knock at Smalls and how it was arrived at for people to show up for these late night sessions.
The secret knock was keep knocking till we let you in.
That's what it was?
That was it.
That was the secret knock. Because how could you hear it? Well, you were playing acoustic,
but you couldn't because it would be very loud, you know. But, they would keep knocking, and then one of us would get up and, you know.
See, now that it's closed and now that it's not there anymore, was this a legal thing that was taking place? So long as you weren't selling after a certain time, it was cool, right?
Yeah, it was a gray area, but, you know. Yeah.
Alcohol
was being consumed.
Are you legally permitted to talk about it?
Yeah, probably. What are they going to do now? It was cool, though. It was cool. You never knew who was going to knock. Harry Dean Stanton knocked one night at about 4 in the morning, and he had just heard about it.
Yeah.
None of us knew him. He didn't come into the bar, and he was sitting there. He was standing with his guitar, and we let him in, and it was great. He had a good time, and then he started playing Spanish songs and singing in Spanish, and we all shut up and just listened.
Oh, man. That's
awesome. Great.
He's great.
He is.
He's in the Avengers movie.
Is he?
Oh,
yes.
I hear that's great.
It's
and
great.
I don't like action flicks, but I hear
Did you
it's
just
great.
See it?
I saw it twice.
Did you
like
saw
it
twice?
I saw it twice.
Oh, my God.
Wow. I am committed to this film. I love it, and Harry Dean Stanton makes
wow.
this great, and then he does the little tip of the hat because he was an alien. You know?
Oh, sure, yeah.
So he does
yeah.
a little, oh, a little alien. Or, God, I'm ruining it for like 10 oh, billion God. People.
No, no, no.
Does he die at the end? Don't tell us.
I'm not saying nothing else, but it's a great movie, and he's in it, and it's great.
Cool. Gentlemen, thank you both.
Thank you.
Just great to have you on the air. The website's, again, it's OscarJordan.com, and it's PilgrimTunes.com, and we're going to go back to the last Pilgrim track we played to play us off the air. This is Mr. Brown off their recent album Late, and Oscar's albums, the first one, Mr. Bad Luck, and the second one is Eclectic Soul, both of which are still available on iTunes and Amazon.
Amazon.com,
CD Baby, everything.
Wow. Everywhere.
Great. Gentlemen, thank you both. It's
thank
been a
you.
Pleasure having you. Michael Sterling, we miss you, and we'll chat with you next week.
Much is the lie. Sit down, boy. We got a fight. Gotta lay my body down. Deep beneath the ground. Gotta lay my body down. On the other side of town. Gotta lay my body down. Like a cat, and he bit me like a dog. Try to poke my eyes, I smashed my head against the wall. Then he threw me on the counter, from his pocket came a knife. It was on that whiskey bar, he took my life. Gotta lay my body down, deep beneath the ground.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.